An Osho Talk. Dang Dang Doko Dang. Talks on Zen, number 8.
The first question. As a child, Sundays have been something very special to me. Now, since a few days, I wake up every morning, look out, see the sun shining through the trees, hear the birds singing, and get this feeling, another Sunday. I put on my best clothes and have Sunday for the whole day. What is happening to me? Don't make a problem out of it. The mind is constantly searching to bounce upon anything, even on happiness. It makes a problem out of happiness also. If you are feeling happy, you ask why. That question is dangerous. It is good if you are suffering to ask why, because the suffering has to be dissolved, transcended. Ways and means have to be found to get out of it. The why is relevant. But when you are happy, then to ask why is to disturb it. There is no need to ask any question. When happiness surrounds you, accept it totally without any questioning. If you are ill, diagnosis is needed, analysis is needed, because the disease has to be found. But if you are healthy, you don't go to the doctor that why I am healthy, diagnose my health, what is happening to me? You don't go. It is an old habit of the mind, because it has been always living in misery, unhappiness, and always the why has been relevant. So when for the first time clouds disappear and the sun shines in your life, the old question goes on persisting, why? Learn to accept happiness. Learn to enjoy it without any questioning. Learn to trust happiness. Don't doubt it, because the very doubt will be a poisoning. It rarely happens. Those moments are very few and far between. When they come, welcome. Open your door. Receive with your full heart. Don't withhold anything. Even a question will become a very, very strong wall between you and your happiness. Every day is a Sunday. It should be so. Every day is a holiday. It should be so, because all days belong to Him. Each moment is holy. Once you understand it, you will stop asking questions like this. Don't think that any particular day is needed to be happy. Only a particular mind. It has nothing to do with time. Everything depends on the attitude. How you look at life There are people for whom even a Sunday is not a Sunday. There is no light, no sun rising, even on a Sunday. They are clouded in their own darkness, shrouded in their own misery. They carry their hell around them. Even if you force them into heaven, they will go on carrying their hell. They will live in their hell. Nobody can force them out of their hells unless they decide to drop it. It is your decision to be happy or to be unhappy. I have heard about a Sufi mystic who was always happy, always and always. Nobody has ever seen him unhappy. As if he did not know that language. As if the only way he knew to be was happiness. He became very old. And one day a man asked him, "Will you please tell me your secret? How you remain so happy? How you remain so unperturbed? How each moment one can be so blissful? It is impossible. It is unbelievable. What's your secret?" The old man laughed and he said, "Long before I found one simple thing, that each morning when I open my eyes, there are two alternatives to choose for that day, either to be happy or to be unhappy. And I always choose to be happy. Simple is my secret, because each day gives me only two alternatives to choose, to be happy or to be unhappy. And I always choose to be happy, that's all. There is nothing more to it. But you will not believe in it. You will say, this old man is deceiving. He must have some other secret. But I also tell you, this is the secret. All great truths are simple truths, very simple. Try tomorrow morning. Before you open your eyes, have a clear-cut vision of two alternatives, of being in hell or heaven. Visualize misery on one hand, visualize blissfulness on another hand. See deep into both. Don't be in a hurry. Look into both as deeply as possible and wait and then decide. If you want to be unhappy, then decide. Let it be your decision. And then be truly unhappy the whole day. Be committed to your decision. And then don't try to escape from it. Then whatsoever happens, you remain miserable. And if you decide to be happy, then stick to it. And soon you will realize that your life is your decision. You are suffering because you go on deciding that way. You are suffering because you go on clinging to your suffering. You have made a habit out of it. It is just mechanical. Good. You should feel grateful that it is happening to you, that every day is becoming a holiday. Holidays are disappearing from the world. In the legal sense, People are having more holidays. Work days are being reduced all over the world from 6 to 5, from 5 to 4, and soon even that will not be so. People will need, at least in the very highly developed technological societies, one day of the week will do. And 6 days people can have holidays. But holiday is disappearing. That quality of sacredness, that quality of holiness is disappearing. I have heard about a very reformed temple. Of course, it is in Southern California. Because everything in Southern California is a little far out. Even religion. There is a reform temple in Beverly Hills that is so reform that on the holiest of days, Yom Kippur, they have a sign on the door saying closed for the Jewish holidays. That quality, that consciousness is disappearing from the world. People have more leisure. That is another thing. But what they do with their leisure? They create more misery for themselves. Finding nothing to do, they do harm to themselves or to others. More accidents happen on the holidays. More car accidents, more murders, more suicides. And after the holiday, people are so much tired that they need a whole week's rest for to recuperate, to recover. They do 1001 things on holidays just to keep busy, because not to be busy is to be with oneself, and that has become almost impossible. To be with oneself and to be happily with oneself, that dimension is completely lost. That's what a holiday is or should be. One is so full of God, so full of being, that there is no need to do anything. There is no need to be occupied. Occupation is just an escape. It is a good way to avoid encountering yourself, encountering life. Holidays are disappearing. It is good that every day a feeling arises in you that this is a holiday. It is. If it was not so before, then you were missing something. Now it has started happening. Don't make it a question. I used to know a man who was an atheist. Once I heard that he has become a theist, I could not believe it. So when I came across him, I asked him, "How come you decided to become an atheist?" Well, he said, "I used to be an atheist, but I gave it up." "Why?" I inquired. He said, "No holidays." If you are an atheist, then there are no holidays. There is no God. Then there are no Sundays. The Christian parable says that God created the world in 6 days. And on the seventh day, Sunday, he rested. That rest was very beautiful. It was out of great creation. He was feeling fulfilled. He has created the whole world. And he looked on the sixth day and he said, good, very good. And he rested. He was happy, like a small child who has made something and looks from every side and says, good, so I have done it. And he rested on the seventh day. That rest day was a fulfillment day. The parable has much significance. It says you can have rest only after creation. If you don't create anything, your life will be restless. You will not be able to have a holiday. Create something. Only then you can rest. Rest is a byproduct. You cannot directly rest. First, you have to be so creative. You have to feel so good about yourself, so happy with yourself, so worthy that you can allow rest to yourself, that you can allow a day just for fun. Ordinarily, people can't allow a day of rest for themselves because they are so feeling condemned about themselves. They are feeling so unworthy. They have not done anything worth. They have not experienced any fulfillment. No fruition has happened. They have not blossomed. Hence, a continuous occupation, a continuous activity is needed. Many people go on working and working and working, then one day they die. Because their work is not creative. When the work is creative, the work is creative when you love it. The work is creative when you feel in tune with it. The work is creative when you enjoy it. The work is creative when you choose it, when it fits with your being, and there is a great harmony between you and your work. Once that happens, whatsoever you do is creative. And after each creative moment, you can relax. That relaxation is earned. Yes, God earned relaxation for the seventh day. 6 days he worked hard. He created the whole world. Seventh day he had earned it. He was worthy of it. That's the meaning of the parable. If you are creative, only then you can have holidays. Not otherwise. So if you want to have holidays, become more and more creative. I'm not saying that be creative in the eyes of others. That is irrelevant. Just be creative in your own eyes. Whatsoever you do. If you love it, then do it. Otherwise, don't do it. Then choose some other way. Life is vast. Says Jesus, there are many mansions in my God's house. There are many dimensions in life. There is enough opportunity to choose. If you are not feeling fulfilled in something that you are doing, then don't do it. Because this will be a sheer wastage and you will not have earned holidays. A man who has lived according to his being, who has done his own thing, earns death. Then he dies, but the death is a Sunday. Then he dies, but he dies fulfilled. He has no complaints. He lived the way he wanted to live. If I am going to die and God asks me, if I send you back, how you would like to live, I will say the same. I loved it. I enjoyed it. I would like to live the same way. Just think about you. If you die and the God asks you if you are sent back to the world, what changes you would like to make in your life? Will you be able to say that I would like to live the same way, absolutely the same way? If not, then you are doing something wrong with your life. Then you are dragging your life. Then you are not living it. Then you are simply killing time, as they say. Then you are simply wasting. Your energies are simply dissipated. They will not become an integral force, and there is not going to be any blossoming. Your tree is going to remain without any fruits and flowers. How can you be happy and how can you enjoy time as a holy opportunity? That is the meaning of holiday. A holy day. A day which is not profane. A day which is not ordinary. And once you know how to be creative, each moment becomes holy. Whenever you create something, you participate with the creator. You have become a small creator in your own right. If you write a small poem, maybe nobody likes it. Or you sing a song, nobody applauds it. That is irrelevant. But you enjoyed it. Singing, you were happy. You participated in that moment with God. You helped Him to create a song. You became instrumental. In fact, whatsoever is created by Him. You allowed Him to create a small song through you. Then you feel tremendously good. Good about yourself. And that is one of the basic qualities of a religious man. He always feels good about himself. He is not in any way guilty. Guilt does not exist in him. Because he has lived the life as he wanted to live it. He loved his life the way it happened. It was the only life that he wanted to live. Then there is no guilt. Remember, a guilty person is not a religious person. A guilty person is ill. A guilty person is neurotic. A guilty person needs psychiatric help. A religious person feels tremendously good about himself. Whatsoever he is doing something intrinsically valuable. This should be insisted as much as possible, that worth in life arises only when you do something intrinsically valuable. There are two types of values in life. One is intrinsic value. You sing a song. It has an intrinsic value. It is the means and it is the end also. Or you sing a song in the marketplace to earn a little money. That money is not intrinsic to the song. That money is an outside value. And if you are singing your song only for the money, then the activity is no more holy. It is profane. If you are singing your song for the happiness that it brings to you, maybe as a byproduct it brings money also, but that is irrelevant. If it brings good, if it does not bring, that too is good. But your activity has an inner glow in it. It is intrinsically valuable in itself. You are happy that you could sing. You are happy that you had an opportunity to sing. Then every day will become meditative, holy. If you are rightly doing meditations here, this is going to happen to everybody. That's my whole effort here, to help you enjoy each moment as it comes. As a child, Sundays have been something very special to me. Now, since a few days, I wake up every morning, look out, see the sun shining through the trees, hear the birds singing, and get this feeling, another Sunday. I put on my best clothes and have Sunday for the whole day. What is happening to me? Something tremendously beautiful is happening to you. Allow it to happen. Don't help your mind to create any trouble. The mind will try, because mind feels happy only when there is some misery. Mind's happiness is not your happiness, and your happiness is never mind's happiness. Your goals are different, in fact diametrically opposite. Mind feels happy only when you are miserable. Then there is something to do. Then mind becomes dominating. Then he can dictate, do this, do that. Because one has to fight with the misery, and you have to take advice of the mind. When you are happy, mind is not needed. You can discard it. There is no need for it. It is just like when the country is at war, then the army is needed. Then suddenly you see army becomes so predominant. Everywhere you see soldiers, military moving from here and there, all the trains full of them. When the war disappears, they also by and by disappear. Then you don't see them so much. Then they are discarded. Not completely, because our peace is not complete. Our so-called peace is nothing but the gap between two wars. So they recede back into their cantonment areas, into their camps. But they go on parading there, preparing there for some war that can happen any moment. But they are no more dominant. And if a country really attains to peace, then military will have to be disbanded. It will not be needed. Or think, you are ill, then suddenly the physician, the doctor becomes important in your mind. When you are healthy, you forget completely that doctors exist. When you are ill, then suddenly passing on the street, you read doctors' nameplates. they become predominant. They become the figure and the whole life becomes just a background. When you are not ill and you are healthy, there are no more figures. They recede back. The gestalt changes. The same is happening with the mind. If you are miserable, mind is needed to get rid of the misery. If you are happy, mind is not needed. You can simply throw it. You can put it aside. Mind feels neglected when you are happy. So mind starts creating problems about happiness. The mind can say, look, don't be foolish. It is not possible. Every day cannot be Sunday. Look at the calendar. This is Monday or Friday, and every day cannot be Sunday. This is just illusion. And every moment cannot be a moment of happiness. Who has ever heard that a person can live always in happiness? This is not possible. You must be getting into some wrong notions, in delusions. Or you have hypnotized yourself. Or something has gone wrong. Beware. This is not humanly possible. Mind thinks that only misery is possible. It has a great investment in misery. Remember it. Working here with me, by and by, this moment will come to everybody. It has to come. That's for what we are working. When it comes, don't listen to the mind. People come to me. They come, we are feeling so happy. How come? We have never felt so happy. And if I look at their faces, it seems that something has gone wrong. They are feeling happy. It appears to them that something has gone wrong. I have heard about a great priest who was teaching to his disciples about how to give religious sermons. The preacher was instructing his newly minted ministers on the importance of facial expression harmonizing with the speech. When you speak of heaven, he said, let your face light up. Let it be irradiated with a heavenly gleam. Let your eyes shine with reflected glory. But when you speak of hell, well, then your ordinary faces will do. Misery has settled. It has become almost your character. To be miserable has become your ordinary existence. When happiness comes, you cannot believe in it. You cannot trust in it. This is a very ill state of affairs, but it is how it is. And you will have to learn how to trust happiness. You will have to learn how to trust joy. You will have to learn how to be non-doubting when happiness comes. To be vulnerable, open. If you cannot learn that, happiness may knock at your door and you may not open the door. watch your patterns and don't be so much identified with the patterns. People go on repeating the old tapes again and again and again. It is not that happiness has not knocked at your door. It has knocked many times. And it is not that God has not stretched His hand towards you. He has been groping for you for millennia. But you have become so clever and cunning in dodging Him. If the devil comes and gets hold of you, you immediately surrender. Because you say, what can I do? If God comes to you, you cannot surrender. Because in the first place, you cannot believe that God exists. This is really something. There are people who say there is no God. But still they believe in the devil. It is difficult to believe in God. It is not so difficult to believe in the devil. It is easier. In fact, without devil, how you will be miserable? Without devil, on whom you will throw your responsibilities? Whom you will find as an excuse? Devil is your excuse. You can remain miserable, and you can say the devil is making you miserable. And this devil goes on changing his form. It has taken many forms through the history. Sometimes it was the fate. Sometimes it was the devil. Now, according to Freudians, it is your unconscious. And according to Marxists, it is the social structure. But there is somebody who goes on creating misery for you. Nobody is creating misery for you. You are clinging with it. But this is very hard to accept. Because then your whole image becomes neurotic. And you carry a very golden image of yourself.
I have heard a very beautiful anecdote . It is a rare beauty. Senior citizens, Israel and Emma, met at a singles dance on Miami Beach, and within 2 weeks they were married. They felt it was a perfect match, for they were both 90 years old. On the first night of their honeymoon, they got into bed, and the old man squeezed Emma's hand, she squeezed back, and they fell asleep. The second night, Israel squeezed her hand again, Emma squeezed back, and they went right to sleep. On the third night, Israel once more excused his bride's hand. "No, not tonight," said Emma. "I have got a headache." People go on repeating old tapes to the very end. So this is an old tape that is creating the question, what is happening to me? As if something like a catastrophe or something like a calamity is happening to you. Nothing is happening to you. You are coming back home. Nothing is happening to you. You are dropping nonsense. You are dropping the rotten mind. you are stopping playing the old tapes. The second question, I am having a great struggle deep inside me before taking the final step. But last night, when I slept in orange clothes, I felt myself a different person. What are you doing? It is dangerous to take your responsibility. Because one day it is going good, another day it is going bad. I'm not doing anything. I have heard about a Sufi mystic who had a small school. And guests used to visit him from far away places. One day, a prince came to visit him. And the Sufi had not right pots, utensils to prepare food and to offer food to this prince. So he went to the king and he told him that a prince has come to our poor school and we would need few pots, golden, silver from you. We will return them back tomorrow because by the tomorrow morning he will be leaving. So he took 7 pots. Next day he came with 9 pots. The king asked, you had taken only 7. Why you have brought 9 pots? These 2 small pots don't belong to me. He said, what can I do? Last night, your big pot gave birth to 2 twins. These are the twins. The king could not believe it, could not think that it can happen, but greed overtook him. He said, what is wrong in it? This man, by some mistake, has brought these parts, so why not accept? He accepted. He said, very good, you are a very honest man. Otherwise, who brings babies? If parts give babies, people keep babies. After a month, the Sufi came again. He said, again the prince has come and we need more parts because he has brought few friends also. So almost 20 parts he took. But then he never came for 2-3 days. The king called him, what happened? You have not returned? He said, I am sorry. 10 of them died. Now the king was very mad. He said, are you gone mad? How parts can die? He said, just think of that time. If parts can give birth to babies, why can't they die? So today it was good, but I am not going to accept. Tomorrow it will be bad. Then you will come to me and say, Bhagwan, what are you doing to me? It is you, and only you. Don't throw your responsibilities anywhere. This night, you have been a little good to yourself. You allowed to happen something. I am having a great struggle deep inside me before taking the final step. But last night, when I slept in orange clothes, I felt myself a different person. What are you doing? I am not doing anything at all. Just the gesture. The person is not a sannyasin yet. That is his struggle. He is thinking continuously whether to take sannyas or not to take sannyas. You allowed something. It was just like a rehearsal. that you slept in orange clothes just to see what happens. The very idea that something is going to happen helped it happen. You relaxed in orange clothes. The mind was more at ease. At least you have done something. A very small gesture, but yet you have done something. At least you decided to sleep in orange. A person who has been continuously in conflict, for him even a slight decision gives such relaxation that others cannot imagine. It will be difficult for others to see because they are sleeping in orange every night. They cannot believe that something can happen only because of orange. But you don't know. The person who has asked the question, he is in deep conflict, struggle, divided. Even this small gesture helped him to relax. Even this much courage, although not much, because he must have put light off so nobody can see. Not much, but it's still something. He took courage in the darkness of the night to become a sannyasin. He must have felt good, relaxed. Whenever you come to any decision, you feel good. And if the conflict is very great, greater the conflict, greater will be the happiness that will come out of the decision. But don't bring me in, because it is very dangerous. I don't play that game at all. Let me tell you one anecdote. Rabbi Jacobs, "I need $50 to get out of debt," sobbed Gottlieb. "I keep praying to God for help, but He doesn't send it." "Don't lose faith," said the rabbi. "Keep praying." After Gottlieb left his house, the rabbi felt sorry for him. "I don't make much money," he thought, "but that poor man needs it. I will give him $25 out of my own pocket." A week later, the rabbi stopped Gottlieb and said, "Here, God sent this to you." Back in his home, Gottlieb bowed his head. "Thank you, Lord," he said, "but next time you send money, don't send it through Rabbi Jacobs. That crook kept half of it. So please be direct. Don't bring me in. Otherwise, someday or other, you are going to be angry with me." So from the very beginning, it is better to be clear. Now this man is going to take sannyas someday. He will have to. So I have to make him completely clear that it is his decision to take sannyas. It is not my persuasion. It is his decision to jump into the fire. I will keep myself completely clean out of it. Only then your decision helps you to crystallize. When you take it on your own, absolutely on your own, you become centered. Sannyas will make you more free, not less. Sannyas is not a sort of slavery. It is freedom. Freedom from the formalities of the society. Freedom from the oppressive burdens of the others. Freedom to be yourself. Sannyas is an effort to become an individual. My help is available here, but it is only your decision which will change you. Even if you take my help, it is you who takes it. I am like a river flowing. It is your decision to drink out of me or not. It is absolutely yours. And let it be so. It needs much courage to take all the responsibility on one's shoulders. But that courage is a device. It happened. Feingold was on his deathbed. He was surrounded by his children. "Don't worry, Papa. We will have a big funeral," declared his eldest son. "There will be 100 limousines, 10 cars with flowers." "We don't need all that," interrupted Feingold's second son. 50 limos and 5 cars with flowers is more than enough." "What you are talking and what do you are making such a big deal?" said the dying man's youngest son. "We don't need any flowers. We will just have the immediate family. 2 cars is enough." At that moment, Feingold raised himself up and said, "Listen, boys, just hand me my pants and I will walk to the cemetery." "You have to walk. Don't wait for 100 limousines and 10 cars full of flowers. Nothing doing. Get into your pants and walk. But be on your own. Only that way one grows. There is no other way to grow. The mind always wants to throw responsibilities on somebody else. The mind always wants to become a slave. The mind is a slave. It is afraid of freedom. It is afraid of responsibility. Hence so many churches and so many organizations exist in the world, because so many people are ready to fall in their traps. In fact, churches are not responsible. It is people's need. Because they need certain types of imprisonments, somebody is going to provide them. The economists say that there is a subtle law working in life of supply and demand. Demand and supply. You demand and somebody is bound to come to supply it. People demand slaveries for themselves. Hence Hinduism, Christianity, Islam and thousands of others exist who are ready to make a sieve out of you. They say, "Come here, here is the sievers," and you become just a part of the crowd. I am not here to make you a sieve. You have been a sieve for too long already. I am here to make a man out of you. It is going to be arduous. And you have to start becoming responsible for your own life. Once you start feeling responsible for your own life, you start growing. Because then there is no point in wasting time, in postponing, in waiting. Nobody is coming to help you. All waiting is futile. All waiting is sheer wastage. So if there is a conflict, go deep into it. Decide something. Only through decisions you become more and more conscious. Only through decisions you become more and more crystallized. Only through decisions you become sharp. Otherwise one becomes dull. People go on from one guru to another, from one master to another, from one temple to another. Not because they are great seekers, but because they are incapable of decision. So they go from one to another. This is their way to avoid commitment. The same happens in other human relationships. A man goes from one woman to another, goes on changing. People think he is a great lover. He is not a lover at all. He is avoiding. He is trying to avoid any deep involvement. Because with deep involvement, problems have to be faced. Much pain has to be gone through. So one simply plays safe. So one makes it a point never to go too deep into somebody. Because if you go too deep, it may not be possible to come back easily. And if you go too deep into somebody, somebody else goes deep into you also. It is always proportionate. If I go very deep in you, the only way is to allow you also to go that deep in me. It is a give and take. It is a sharing. And one may be entangled too much, and it will be difficult to escape. And the pain may be too much. So people learn how to play safe. Just let surfaces meet. Hit and run love affairs. And before you are caught, run. This is what is happening in the modern world. People have become so juvenile, so childish, they are losing all maturity. Because maturity comes only when you are ready to face pain of your being. Maturity comes only when you are ready to take the challenge. And there is no greater challenge than love. To live happily with another person is the greatest challenge in the world. It is very easy to live peacefully alone. It is very difficult to live peacefully with somebody else. Because two worlds collide. Two worlds meet. Totally different worlds. That's how they are attracted to each other, because they are totally different. Almost opposite, polars. It is very difficult to be peaceful in relationship, but that is the challenge. If you escape from that, you escape from maturity. If you go into it with all pain and still continue into it, then by and by the pain becomes a blessing. the curse becomes a blessing. By and by, through the conflict, the friction, crystallization arises. By the struggle, you become more alert, more aware. The other becomes like a mirror to you. You can see your ugliness into the other. The other provokes your unconscious, brings it on the surface. You will have to know all hidden parts of your being, and the easiest way is to be mirrored, reflected into relationship. Easier, I call it, because there is no other way. But it is hard. It is hard, arduous, because you will have to change through it. And when you come to one master, even a greater challenge exists before you. You have to decide, and the decision is for the unknown. And the decision has to be total and absolute, irreversible. It is not a child's game. It is a point of no return. So much conflict arises. But don't go on continuously changing, because this is the way to avoid yourself. And you will remain soft. You will remain babyish. Maturity will not happen to you. I have heard, after taking off her clothes for an examination, Mistress Greenberg said on the table, "Lady," said the doctor, "I have to tell you that you are by far the dirtiest, filthiest, most unclean woman I have ever examined in my life." "How do you like that?" said Mrs. Greenberg. "The doctor I went yesterday said the same thing." "Then why did you come here?" "I wanted to get another opinion," answered Mrs. Greenberg. People go on collecting opinions. Be finished. Take courage. Enough opinions you have already have with you. Decide. One thing is certain, that the past that you have lived has not been an enrichment to you. So there is nothing to decide for it. The known has nothing to be decided for it, only the unknown. Only the unknown should have a call for you, because that you have not lived yet. You have not moved in that territory. Move, because something new may happen there. Always decide for the unknown, whatsoever the risk, and you will continuously grow. Go on deciding for the known, you move in a circle with the past again and again. You go on repeating it. You become a gramophone record. And decide, the sooner you can do, the better. Postponement is simply stupid, because tomorrow also you will have to decide. So why not today? And do you think tomorrow you will be wiser than today? Do you think tomorrow you will be livelier than today? Do you think? Tomorrow you will be younger than today, fresher than today? Today you will be older. Your courage will be less. Tomorrow you will be more experienced, your cunningness will be more. Tomorrow death will come closer, you will start wavering and being afraid more. Never postpone for the tomorrow. And who knows, tomorrow may come, may not come. If you have to decide, you have to decide right now. Dr. Vogel, the dentist, finished his examination on a pretty young patient, Miss Bassman. He said, "I am afraid. I am going to have to pull out your wisdom teeth." "Ah, my," exclaimed the girl, "I would rather have a baby." "Well," said Dr. Vogel, "could you make up your mind so I can adjust the chair?" Make up your mind. Don't go on postponing infinitely. The third question. Sometimes it seems like wherever I go, I am facing the wall. The wall is not outside. The wall is inside you. So wherever you go, you carry your wall. When you are alert, you feel it. When you are not alert, you don't feel it. But the wall is inside you. The wall is of your own ego. Ego surrounds you like a wall. It persuades you that by surrounding you in this way, it will protect you. That's the seduction of the ego. It goes on telling you again and again that if I am not there, you will be unprotected. You will become too vulnerable and there will be too much risk. So let me guard you. Let me surround you. Yes, there is a certain protection in the ego. But the wall becomes your imprisonment also. There is a certain protection. Otherwise nobody will suffer the miseries that ego brings. There is a certain protection. It protects you against the enemies. But then it starts protecting you against the friends also. It is just like you close your door and you hide behind it. You are afraid of the enemy. But then a friend comes, but the door is closed and he cannot enter. If you are too much afraid of the enemy, then the friend also cannot enter in you. And if you open the door for the friend, there is every risk that the enemy may also enter. One has to think about it deeply. It is one of the greatest problems in life. And only very few courageous people tackle it rightly. Others become cowards and hide, and then their whole life is lost. Life is risky. Death has no risk. Die, and then there is no problem for you. And nobody is going to kill, because how you anybody can kill you when you are already dead? Enter in a grave and be finished. Then there is no illness. Then there is no anxiety. Then there is no problem. You are out of all problems. But if you are alive, then there are millions of problems. More alive a person, more problems are there. but nothing wrong in it, because it is how struggling with problems, fighting with the challenge, you grow. The ego is a subtle wall around you. It does not allow anybody to enter you. You feel protected, secure. But this security is death-like. It is the security of the plant inside the seed. The plant is afraid to sprout, because who knows, the world is so hazardous. And the plant will be so soft, so fragile. Behind the wall of the seed, hiding inside the cell, everything is protected. Or think of a small child in the mother's womb. Everything is there, whatsoever is the need of the child, it is fulfilled immediately. There is no anxiety, no fight, no future. The child simply lives blissfully, and every need is fulfilled by the mother. But would you like to remain always in your mother's womb? It is very protective. If it was given to you to choose, would you choose always to be in the mother's womb? Very comfortable. What more comfort is possible? Scientists say that we have not been yet able to make a more comfortable situation than womb. A womb seems to be the last, the ultimate in comfort. In fact, Freud and his followers say that the desire of moksha is nothing but desire of the same last womb of the mother. So comfortable. No anxiety, no problem. No need to work. Sheer existence. And everything supplied immediately, automatically. Here the need arises and immediately it is supplied. Not even the trouble to breathe, the mother breathes for the child. Not to bother about food, the mother eats for the child. But would you like to remain in the mother's womb? It is comfortable, very protective. But it is not life. Life is always in the wild. Life is there, outside. The English word ecstasy is very, very significant. It means to stand out. Ecstasy means to get out. Out of all cells and all protections and all egos and all comforts and all death-like walls. To be ecstatic means to get out, to be free, to be moving, to be a process, to be vulnerable, to be open. So winds can come and pass through you. We have the expression, sometimes we say that experience was outstanding. Exactly that is the meaning of ecstasy, outstanding. When a seed breaks and the life hidden behind it starts manifesting, it is ecstasy. When a child is born and leaves the womb behind and leaves the mother behind and all the comforts and all the conveniences behind and moves into the unknown world, it is ecstasy. When a bird breaks the egg and flies into the sky, it is ecstasy. The ego is the egg, and you will have to come out of it. Be ecstatic. Get out of all protections and cells and securities. Then you will attain to the wider world, the vast, the infinite. Only then you live, and you live abundantly. But fear cripples you. The child also, before he gets out of the womb, must be hesitating to get out or not, to be or not to be. Must be taking one step forward and another step backwards. Maybe that's why the mother goes through so much pain. The child is hesitating. The child is not yet totally ready to be ecstatic. The past pulls back. The future calls forth, and the child is divided. This is the wall of indecision, of clinging with the past, of clinging with the ego. And you carry it everywhere. Sometimes in rare moments when you are very alive and alert, then you will be able to see it. Otherwise it is very transparent wall. You will not be able to see it. One can live his whole life, not one but many, without becoming aware that one is living inside a cell, closed from everywhere, windowless, what Leibniz used to call a monad. No doors, no windows, just closed inside, but it is transparent, a glass wall. Sometimes it seems like wherever I go, I am facing the wall. Yes, not facing exactly, you are carrying the wall in front of your eyes. When your eyes have a clarity, then you see it. When your eyes are dull and you are unconscious, you can't see it. This ego has to be dropped. One has to gather courage and shatter it on the floor. People go on feeding it in millions of ways, not knowing that they feed their own hell. I have heard Mistress Cochrane was standing beside the coffin of her dead husband. Their son stood at her elbow. The mourners one by one passed in review. "He is feeling no pain now," said Mistress Croy. "What did he die of?" "Poor fella," said Mistress Cochrane. "He died of the gonorrhea." Another woman gazed at the corpse. "He is well out of it now," she said. "He has got a smile of serenity on his face." "What did he die from?" "He died of gonorrhea," said the widow. Suddenly, the son pulled his mother aside. "Mom," he said, "that's a terrible thing to say about Pop. He did not die of gonorrhea. He died of diarrhea." "I know that," said Mistress Cochrane, "but I would rather have them thinking he died like a sport, instead of the sit that he was." To the very end, the ego continues playing games. The ego does not allow you to be true. It goes on forcing you to be false. The ego is the lie. And one has to decide it. It needs great courage, because with it will shatter all that you have been nursing up to now. with it will shatter your whole past. With it you will shatter completely. Somebody will be there, but you will not be that person. A discontinuous entity will arise in you, fresh, uncorrupted by the past. Then there will be no wall. Then wherever you will be, you will see the infinite without any boundaries. The old man, entering his favorite bar, found that the usual barmaid had been replaced by a stranger. He was nonplussed at first, but gallantly told her that she was the best looking girl I have seen in a long time. The new barmaid, a haughty type, tossed her head and replied acidly, "I am sorry, I can't return the compliment." "Ah, well, my dear," the old man answered placidly, "could not you have done as I did? Could not you have told a lie?" Our all formalities are nothing but helping each other's ego. They are lies. You say something to somebody and he returns the compliment. Neither you are true, nor he is true. We go on playing the game, the etiquette, the formality, the civilized faces and masks. Then you will have to face the wall, and by the wall will become so thick that you will not be able to see anything. The wall goes on getting more and more thicker every day, so don't wait. If you have come to feel that you are carrying a wall around you, drop it, jump out of it. It takes only a decision to jump out of it, nothing else. Then don't feed it from tomorrow. Then whenever you see that you are again nursing it, stop. Within few days you will see it has died, because it needs your constant support. It needs breastfeeding. The last question. When the other bank is this very bank, then there is no need for enlightenment. If one is alive in this moment, then why one should dream of enlightenment? These questions with when and if are very cunning questions. And you are not deceiving anybody else, you are deceiving yourself. Listen to the question again. When the other bank is this very bank, then there is no need for enlightenment. If you have come to know that the other bank is this very bank, then you have already become enlightened. There is no need. This is what enlightenment is all about. If you have come to know that this moment is all, and the place I am is the whole, and this world is the other world, you have attained. You are liberated. Because if there is no other world, there cannot be any desire. If this moment is all, all desiring ceases. When the other bank is this very bank, then there is no need for enlightenment. Absolutely true. If one is alive in this moment, then why one should dream of enlightenment? There is no need. But these questions won't help. It has not happened to you. This bank is not yet the other bank. And this moment is yet not the eternity. You have listened to me. And you have become parrot-like. I say that there is no need for any enlightenment. The very search for enlightenment is nightmarish. But that is not going to help. You will have to drop all searching, then you will be able to realize the fact that you are already enlightened. There is nowhere to go. You are already there. You have always been there. From the very beginning, there has been no going astray. We have lived in God. We have lived as gods. There is no other way. If you have understood this, then there is no need for enlightenment. It has happened. If you have not understood it, you have simply listened to me, and you are playing with words, then you will be getting into more and more confusion. Your desire will not stop by these when and ifs. It will continue. Your ambition will not disappear. Be more practical. Don't become theoretical. Don't become metaphysical. Don't become philosophical. Be more practical. Listen to your own state. You have desires of the other sort. You have desires for tomorrow, a better tomorrow. You have hopes for a future. You are continuously hoping that something is going to happen, something great, something extraordinary, something special, and only to you and to nobody else. These ifs and whens will not stop that. If you can drop all hoping, all desiring, what Zen people call Trishna, if you can desire all desire to become somebody or something, if you can drop becoming, if you understand the foolishness of hoping and desiring, and it disappears, and you are left without any trace of desire, that's what enlightenment is, then there is no need. But be practical. I have heard scientists concluded that the ice cap was going to melt and the whole world would be flooded within 6 months. When the news broke, religious leaders went into deep conference. The Protestant hierarchy released a statement, because of the impending disaster, Protestants will go to church and pray for 2 hours every day. Then the Catholics made an announcement, because of the coming deluge, Catholics will make every other day, all day, a day of prayer for the next 6 months. Rabbis from all over the land convened. Then they too issued a message to the world, because the whole world would be flooded in 6 months. Jews will learn how to live underwater. Be more practical. Be more of a Jew. Otherwise, my words can mislead you. I have no intention even to guide you, but my words can misguide you. because you can take them on the surface. You can say, yes, Bhagavan says there is no need for enlightenment. So forget all about meditation and be the fool you have always been. This is not going to change you. Try to understand each word that I say to you, each word that I utter is pregnant with tremendous meaning, but you will have to decode it. The rabbi had stood before the synagogue's board of directors for almost an hour, pleading with them to buy a chandelier for the temple. When he had finished, Blum, the elderly president, stood up. "What are we wasting time talking?" he demanded. "First of all, a chandelier. We aren't got, nobody could even spell it. Second, we aren't got nobody here who could play it. And third, what we need in this synagogue is more light." That's how things go. That's what the poor rabbi is telling all the time. A chandelier is needed. What I am saying to you is that you need a deep centering in the here now. So no desire of the world distracts you. No desire of God distracts you. No desire of liberation distracts you. You are so deeply here now that you are simply here now, and there is nowhere else your mind is moving. Your mind is not wandering anywhere. In that pure moment, completely centered and grounded, you are enlightened. But you will have to attain to that moment. And that cannot be attained by a great philosophical talk. You will have to work hard. You will have to be very practical. Right now, as you are completely drunk. Drunk with desire. He had been to a party and had imbibed a little too freely. Along about 4 in the morning, he was staggering home. Crossing a bridge, he met a policeman. The cop was a friend, and they leaned over the bridge rail to converse a bit. "What is that down there in the water?" the drunk suddenly asked. "Look again, that is the moon," said the cop. He looked again, shook his head, and then demanded, "Okay, okay. But how the hell did I get way up here? Because even the moon is left so down. How the hell did I get way up here?" "You are drunk. I go on talking to you, knowing well that you are drunk with 1001 desires. I am telling you to drop those 1001 desires. You are ready to drop if I can give you a new desire for them. If I can give you a bigger substitute. If I can give you one great desire. So all desires can be sacrificed for it. You are ready to drop your desires, but you are ready only to drop them for a greater desire. That I cannot do. Because the greater desire will be a greater bondage to you. Hence, Zen people say that enlightenment is a nightmare. Hence, Zen people say, don't try to become a Buddha. Otherwise, you will fall into the 7th hell. Don't try. to reach to the ultimate reality, because your very desire to reach it will hinder you. All desiring is a hindrance. The desire for God, for liberation also. You would like me to give you a big desire, so big, a desire with capital letters, so that you can pour down your small tiny desires into it. But that is not what I am going to do. I want you to drop all your desires and not to substitute it with anything else. Then only you can be desireless. Desireless, you are enlightened. Enlightenment is not somewhere waiting for you. It is already here. It surrounds you right now. It is within you and without you. It is in every beat of your heart. But you are not here. Enlightenment is here. You are not here. You are chasing your desires far away, somewhere in the future, on some planets. You are not to find enlightenment somewhere else. The only thing that you have to do is come back home. Enlightenment is waiting for you there. You simply don't go anywhere. That's all. The whole effort is negative. You don't go anywhere. Enlightenment is not a journey. It is your deepest core of being. It is like you sleep in Pune and you dream in the night that you are in Philadelphia. And you are in Pune, all the same, whether you dream of Philadelphia or not. You are lying down here, sleeping in your room, and in your dream you are in Philadelphia. In the morning, you open your eyes and you say it was all a dream, because you find yourself in Pune, not in Philadelphia. Those who have awakened have found themselves in enlightenment. Philadelphia was a dream. This world is a dream. When you awake, this world disappears and you find yourself into the other world. This bank is a dream. When you awake, suddenly you find you have been always on the other bank and you were dreaming about this bank. Desire is a dream. Desire is a dreaming process. It leads you away, but it leads you only in the mind, not in reality. In reality, you are gods. In minds, it depends. You can make anything out of your mind. That's what Hindus say, that it is mind which makes you a tree. It is mind which makes you a tiger. It is mind which makes you a cuckoo. It is mind which makes you a man. When no mind, you are a god. God is your reality. And everything else that you see is just dream. If you understand, there is no need for any enlightenment. If you don't understand, then be alert. Listening to me can be dangerous. You can stop all meditations. You can stop all work. And you can say there is no need. But then you will remain in Philadelphia. Enough for today. Thank you.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.